Hi, I'm retired NYPD Detective Vic Ferrari, and welcome to NYPD Through the Looking Glass podcast, where you'll get unique insight into the New York City Police Department. Before we get started, I encourage you to check out my Amazon author page, where you'll find my series of behind-the-scenes NYPD books. They're $10 paperback, $2.99 ebook download, including my bestseller, NYPD Laughing in the Line of Duty. I hope everyone's having a good week. And before we get rolling with this week's story, which I think is going to be pretty interesting, let's go to the news from the pages of the New York Post. This is actually my favorite. New Jersey police chief retires early after drunken kerfluffle with his own cop who slammed him on the hood of a car. Now, I've seen this video, and it's actually pretty funny. The Jersey Shore police chief, who was slammed onto the hood of his car during a caught-on-camera scuffle with a subordinate, will retire on Friday, 6 months earlier than expected. Bradley Beach police chief Leonard Guida, now this sounds like an episode out of the Jersey Shore, doesn't it, has faced mounting criticism over last week's after local news published body cam video of the November 9th incident in which an apparently inebriated police chief is seen swaying and stumbling his way up to a drunken drunken driving crash as he berates his own sergeant. This is a bad look for this police department. Basically, you got a cop handling a call. This guy's drunk. He comes over and he starts breaking the cop's balls. One of his subordinates, he's off duty and he's drunk and he just shows up in plain clothes. It's obvious he's drunk and he starts breaking this cop's balls about something trivial. I think it was his tie or his hat. And the sergeant keeps telling him, boss, just stay over there. You're drunk. And he keeps pushing his way into this active investigation. Finally, the cop had enough and slammed him on the hood of the car and I think they put handcuffs on him. And then I think it's just a bad look for this police chief. And as many as problems as the NYPD has, I've kind of seen like the darkest side of smaller police departments. So you got to remember, after I did my 20 with the NYPD, I moved down to Florida. I get bored. I take a comparative compliance course, which is like a 2.5 week course to get you up on Florida law and the way they do things down here. And it's different. So down here in Florida, the police departments are really small, so they don't have their own applicant investigation unit. So you have to go to like a private vendor who does your fingerprints, polygraph, background investigation. After you get cleared for that, you basically, it's on you to get a job. And it's not like a civil service in New York where you have to take a test. Down here in Florida, basically what you have to do is interview with these different police departments, hoping that they're going to take a chance on you. So I went to several police departments, and the one that really kind of I found odd was I go to this police department, I'm not going to say, and the person that's interviewing me says, all right, great, you know, we like you and everything. We'd like you to meet some of our people. I'm going to schedule to do a ride along, and I want, you know, we have an NYPD guy that works here. She says, I'd like you to meet him and go out to lunch with him and the guys to see if you would get along. I says, wow, this is a really good idea, because there was another police department that wanted to run me through all the tests without letting me do a ride-along, which to me was a red flag, because why don't you want me to see how your department operates? They were just, you can worry about that later. I was like, thanks, but no thanks. So anyway, she introduces me to this detective. I didn't recognize the name. And the next thing you know, we look at each other, and I'm like, oh, my God. I know this guy, and he's the biggest bullshit artist I've ever met in my life, and he's got them snowed. And he sees me, and he's like, oh, man, this guy knows my act. I hope he doesn't run his mouth about me. So, you know, we go out to lunch, and there's a bunch of cops from his department, and we go to this small restaurant, and we're all talking, and he's introducing me to the guys, and I can tell he's nervous, and he's like, you should really keep your options open. He doesn't want me working there. And I didn't want to work there. And what I took of it from that small department was the cops were entirely too close with local businesses. Like, I think the bunch of us sat down and ate at this diner, a small restaurant. And I think it was like 10 of us. And I think the bill came to like $30. So, you know, I just, in NYPD, something like that wouldn't fly. And then the next thing that kind of raised a red flag was I do a ride-along. And they put me in the car with this, like, 26-year-old cop. Now, keep in mind, I'm in my early 40s. And all this guy wants to do is race up and down the main drag down here, pull people over. He's going 100 miles an hour. He's pulling people over. And he's not nice to motorists. I mean, I wouldn't say he was outly abusing them, but very gruff. His whole thing was giving out tickets. And I said to myself, you know what? This place isn't a good fit for me. There's just some things going on here that I'm just not comfortable with, just the way they treat people and everything. So I wound up taking a job with another department, and then they called me up, and they said, well, how much did they offer you? I was like, no. It's not about the money. It's about the fit. So I passed on that department. So these smaller police departments, you really don't know what you're going to get, and this place down in the Jersey Shore sounds like they hired the wrong guy. So the next story is, stunning NYPD cop sues the police department after nude pic she sent to her lieutenant boyfriend 12 years ago spreads like wildfire. A stunning NYPD officer who was once suspended for interfering in a traffic stop of her alleged drug dealer boyfriend is now taking aim at the department, claiming her career has been derailed after her topless image has been repeatedly shared with fellow finest, according to the lawsuit. Stunning? I saw her photo. I wouldn't go as far as to say stunning, but she's definitely attractive. Listen, if you're dumb enough to take a photo of yourself in a compromising position and put it out on the internet, you kind of got to know that at some point it's going to resurface somewhere. And I like how she's appalled. She was involved with a drug dealer boyfriend. Now all of a sudden she's appalled at her topless photo. I'm not buying it. Sounds to me like she's looking to leave the job and get herself a nice little payday out the door. They'll probably settle with her just to make it go away, as they usually do. Our next story is, this isn't NYPD, this is international, but missing woman, Sarm Helsop's boyfriend, replaced his ship's freezer after she mysteriously vanished from luxury yacht. A British flight attendant vanished from her boyfriend's catamaran, the 47-foot Siren Song. He sailed out of U.S. territorial waters and had his freezer replaced in Grenada, according to her family's private investigator. Helsop was last seen 3 years ago Thursday, leaving a restaurant in the U.S. Virgin Islands with her boyfriend, Ryan Bain. Well, this guy's got problems. They're going to be all over him, but here's the thing. If this happened in multiple countries and international waters, it's going to be a jurisdictional nightmare to figure out what happened and then to prosecute him if they do come up with enough evidence of DNA. But I'm guessing on a boat between sunlight and seawater, I'm guessing DNA doesn't fare well. Just my opinion. I don't know this to be true, but salt water and sunlight is rough stuff. So I doubt if there's any forensic evidence. And then he got rid of the freezer, but he's got problems. Doesn't look like he's anybody I'd want to hang out with. Now, my last news story ties into the topic of today's podcast, so just kind of bear with me. Ex-New York City Police Commissioner says New York City quality of life has really deteriorated as crime surges. Nobody's in charge, he claims. This is ludicrous. When are we going to say no? When is this mayor going to say enough is enough? He's so concerned about his political career, Ray Kelly said. Now, that's true. I'm not a real fan of Eric Adams, but I'm going to give him a little bit more time to do his job. But Ray Kelly saying this? Okay. So for those of you who don't know, Ray Kelly has been and always is a political hack. The press loves my former police commissioner, Ray Kelly, because he puts on this Marine Corps holier-than-thou act and is tough on crime and I'm tough on my cops routine. What a crock of crap. People forget little Ray Kelly was the NYPD commissioner two times. Okay, he was the police commissioner under the late, great David Dinkins during a crime wave as New York City burned during the Washington Heights riots. Ray Kelly was no innovative crime fighter. After Rudy Giuliani, Jack Maples, Bill Bratton, and countless others cleaned up New York City, the little pipsqueak returned under Mayor Mike Bloomberg to reap the benefits. Instead of running his mouth, Rowdy Ray should worry about his fiber intake and have a bran muffin, which leads us to today's conversation. Today I'm going to give you some insight into the New York City police commissioners I worked under. Now, I'm sure it's a tough job. There's tons of pressure coming at you from every angle. The New York City press is quite unfair and relentless when they want their pound of flesh. You're managing over 40,000 employees. You're never going to make anyone happy. Whenever you make a decision, it sends a wave that just creates havoc inside the NYPD until you figure out what program you work at is going to work or should you abandon it. Why would anyone want this job, you ask? It boils down to ego. After you do your time as the police commissioner in the NYPD, you're absolutely guaranteed a book deal, high-paying speaking engagements, and the off chance you want to go back into work, usually the private industry, like what Little Ray Kelly did, there's some corporate company willing to hire you for the Department of Security gig. Guys like that always land on their feet, whether they were good or bad. So I got hired by the NYPD in 1987. I worked under several police commissioners. I'm going to go in chronological order, who I worked on, my opinion, and if I got any stories about them. So from 1984 to 1989, we had Ben Ward. I'd rate Ben Ward as the worst police commissioner. He was an embarrassment. He was always in the paper. They were always after him, but there was always smoke with that. There was always fire with that smoke. My police the day I graduated from the police academy, they had it in Madison Square Garden, and my dad filmed it. During the commencement speeches and people are coming up and getting their awards, Ben Ward fell asleep. He rocked back. His mouth was wide open, and my father's filming this. And then my father later on goes, "Who was the guy on stage that fell asleep?" I go, "That's the police commissioner, Dad." He goes, "Get out of here." I go, "Dad, you don't read the papers?" My father's like, "No, not so much." But yeah, Ben Ward was somewhat of an embarrassment. Before he was another politically, I mean, he was, before the NYPD, he ran several departments. He ran Department of Corrections. And I remember as a kid, there was a scandal out of Rikers Island or wherever he was working that he was getting sexual favors. I don't know it to be true, but there was a story about it in the papers. And it wasn't a good look for him that he was getting sexual favors either from female staff or prisoners. But, I don't know whatever happened with that. There was also a story that he was drunk and he urinated out of a helicopter. I don't know if that story is true, but there was a lot of stories about Ben Ward. He often put his foot in his mouth. He was not well-liked, I can say this, over the rank-and-file members of the department. So he was the police commissioner from 84 to 89, so I got like about 2 years of him. From 1989 to 1990, there was a guy by the name of Richard J. Condon. He was there for a cup of coffee. From what I remember, Ward stepped down for whatever reason. He basically, for a year and a half, he ran the department. I don't think he was a bad guy. Nothing really changed under him. He kind of kept the status quo. No one was ever up in arms about his appointment. So let's just say he was a wash. He wasn't a bad guy. So now we're going to start getting to the interesting ones. From 1990 to 1992, we had Lee Brown. Lee Brown's nickname in the department was Out of Town Brown because he was never around. He was always giving out speeches, going to seminars, going to training. He was a politician masquerading as a police commissioner. Before he got to the NYPD, he was the public safety commissioner of Atlanta. And then later he became Houston's police department commissioner. And then after that, he became the mayor of Houston. He was just a social climber. He always had his eye on the next job. He was very big into community policing, which I'm not a fan of. In theory, everybody loves, community policing because they think, well, the cops in the community, they should get along. And I agree with that, but not the way it was implemented with the NYPD. It was a joke. Every empty suit went into it. I could do a whole podcast about what's wrong with community policing as the way it was implemented with the NYPD. Lee Brown was all over that. He got a ton of federal money for it. And within a couple of years, it was basically abandoned. It's come back and raised its ugly head from time to time. But Lee Out of Town Brown, yeah, he wasn't bad, but he really didn't do anything. So from 92 to 94 was Raymond W. Kelly. And I think I made my point quite clear when it comes to Little Ray, a.k.a. Popeye the Sailor Man, no ball of fire. Under Dinkins, whatever Dinkins wanted. Now, I get you serve under, when you're the police commissioner, you serve under the pleasure of the mayor. But at a certain point, you got to do what's right. It's the same thing if my sergeant tells me, you stand on that post, and I don't want you to get off that post, and across the street, someone's robbing the bank. Oh, well, I'm going to go after the bank robber. Sorry, boss. But he basically didn't do anything. I mean, New York City was at its highest crime rate. And, Ray Kelly, yes, sir, didn't do anything. So after Dinkins, the Giuliani administration comes in, and they hire William J. Bratton. So now, in my opinion, Bratton was the best police commissioner during my 20 years. He came over from running the Boston Police Department. And when he first got there, he was the transit. So originally when I got hired, City Housing and Transit were three separate police departments. And he was running the transit department. And he was great because he started locking up fare beaters. Where in New York, you jump the turnstile, you get a ticket. He said, no, enough of this. We're going to run them through the system. We're going to fingerprint them. We're going to make it a criminal case. The DAs were on board, and guess what? People stopped jumping the turnstile, and when you start stopping people that are jumping the turnstile, you find what? Drugs, you find guns, you start fingerprinting them. Oh, look at this. This guy's wanted for a warrant for murder. This guy's wanted for a burglary. This guy's wanted for a rape. So it takes a lot of bad people off the playing field. It's the same as trespassing, like the housing projects or buildings in narcotics areas where the landlords will sign an affidavit that anyone inside the building that doesn't have reason to be there, an example, yeah, I'm here to pick up my girl. What's your girl's name? I don't know. What apartment is she in? I don't know. You know what? You're going for trespass because the owner of the building has a policy working with the police that anybody inside that building loitering more than likely is there to buy or sell drugs. So they're going through the system and then they get fingerprinted. So I think Bratton was really good. He was great with the press. In a lot of ways, he was a more polished Grady Judd of Polk County, Florida. He shot from the hip. He told it like it was. The cops loved him because, like Giuliani, he let us do our jobs. He backed us. And under Bratton and Giuliani, crime went down. Now, I read a book about this, and according to the book, there was a fallout between Giuliani and Bratton, and that Giuliani didn't like the fact that Bratton was out there front and center and Rudy wanted credit for it. It's almost like a band that makes really good music and they can't get along. It's like, Jesus, guys, you're doing God's work. Why can't you get along? But I think it boiled down to ego and personalities. And then Bratton left. He turned up later on in LAPD. He was LAPD police commissioner. He's bounced around to a couple places. I thought he was a great police commissioner. Most NYPD guys that worked under his tenure will tell you the same thing. And then he left. From 96 to 2000, we had Howard Safer. Now, I like Safer. He was a Fed. He came from the federal government. But in my opinion, he was a fair and decent man. He ran the U.S. Marshals Service. And I actually got promoted to detective under him. So this is a funny story. So I'm in the auto crime division. I get my time in. They tell me you're getting promoted. And I've gone into what the promotion ceremony is like. But the funny thing is you're sitting in an audience with, and the NYPD promotes in bulk. So during promotions, they're usually later in the week on a Thursday or Friday. They have it down at one police plaza in this big auditorium. But I got promoted with like probably 70 or 80, maybe 100 other cops being promoted to detective. You got school crossing guards getting promoted, police administrative aides getting promoted, sergeants getting promoted to lieutenant, cops getting promoted. So you're in this huge auditorium with every member of the department that's going up there. So they call you in alphabetical order by rank, and you wait online going up the stage. And at this on the stage, sometimes the mayor is there, but my time it was Safer and Chief Louis Anamone, who they used to call Screwy Louie. He doesn't like that, but that's what they used to call him. So what happens is, as they call your name, you walk up to the stage, and there's a little piece of tape. You're supposed to stop, salute the police commissioner, take a step forward, shake his hand, turn, face the camera, and walk off stage. I am uncoordinated, and I get nervous, and for the longest time, I couldn't dance, so I don't know the steps. I'm a nervous wreck, and as they're calling the names, I go up there. I walk up to Safer. I shake his hand, and everybody starts laughing. I go, oh, crap. I take a step back. I salute him. It looked like a comedy routine. Someone probably has that on videotape somewhere, but he was a good sport about it. I remember Anamone cracking up. I stepped off stage. But again, Safer, I thought, was a fair and decent man. He kept the department running just fine. Unfortunately, he passed away last year, so condolences to his family. I like Safer. So now we're going to get a little controversial. From 2000 to 2001, Bernard Carrick was our police commissioner. Now, Bernie gets mixed reviews, but overall, I didn't think Bernard Carrick was a bad guy, and he definitely was a law and order guy. The problem with Bernard Carrick was the guys that were around him were drunk with power and would bully other NYPD members. So to give you an example of what I'm talking about, I just broke up with my dermatologist. I like my dermatologist, but I couldn't stand his staff or his office. They were nasty on the phone. He'd give me a prescription. It would never get filled. I would call up to find out what's going on. They'd hang up on you. So it's not always the guy. It's the people he puts in place around him. So, you know, he's got a staff of lieutenants and sergeants and detectives that are guarding him. And they were drunk with power. I mean, so I worked in the 50th precinct. I know a lot of people that work there. And Bernard Kerik lived in the 50th precinct up in the Rivendell section of the Bronx. And his guys would basically terrorize the precinct. Like, they would come in and mess with the desk officer or cops in the precinct. And if you didn't have the right answer, you'd get launched. So say you're working in the 50th precinct and you're the desk officer. And one of Kerik's lieutenants in his detail wants to complain about something. If you don't answer that phone by the second ring, what's your name? Okay. You come into work the next day and like, no, you don't work in the Rivendell section of the Bronx, even though you lived up in Rockland County. Guess what? We're transferring you to Manhattan South or Brooklyn or Queens. We're going to make you pay a toll. It's called highway therapy. So his guys were drunk with power. They were bullies. They really messed with people. That kind of caused him some problems. I remember one time in specific, one of the cops ran into the precinct with an arrest and parked an RMP, a police car, in front of the gas pumps in the back of the precinct. And one of the guys from his security detail wanted to get to the pumps, and the cop didn't move the car fast enough, and there was an issue with that. I don't know if anybody got jammed up, but I remember it was a big deal. So Bernie and his fiefdom made a lot of enemies, which I'm sure didn't help him when it came time to. He got jammed up, and he got arrested and actually went to jail for tax fraud. I don't know the specifics about it, but for all his baggage, Kerik did some really good things. He definitely kept the status quo and law and order. He was definitely, you know, go out there, lock him up, get the arrest. He kind of got addicted to that Comstat thing like everybody else, and then it boils down to a numbers game and not enforcing the law. And before he came to the NYPD, he was a cop in New Jersey. Then he was in with the NYPD for a while. He actually worked in Manhattan North Narcotics as a detective investigator. I heard he did really good case. I heard he was a good cop. There's a famous photo of him holding an M16, providing security for the arrest of one of the Weather Underground. I think it's Susan Rosenberg coming out of like the federal courthouse when he was with the feds. He's one of these guys that he worked everywhere. He was also instrumental. He worked in Department of Corrections. I think he might have been their commissioner or a high-level person in Department of Corrections, but he was instrumental. So Rikers Island was notorious for, you know, for a city jail was worse than a lot of the upstate prisons because you had the baddest of the bad of the worst in the five boroughs, and you had a lot of slashings, you had a lot of robberies inside the jail. So what Kerik figured out, and it was a brilliant move, in the old days, you slash somebody, they would just put you in solitary confinement or take away your commissary. What Kerik started doing was, you know what? If you're in jail waiting for your case to get adjudicated in court while you're sitting here a year or a year and a half, you start slashing people or you start committing crimes, robbing people or worse, or hurt somebody, we're going to pull you out. So say you're on Rikers Island. Rikers Island technically is in the Bronx, believe it or not, even though it's an island. So say you slash somebody with a razor on Rikers Island. They'll pull you out, take you up to Bronx court, and charge you with assault. So that basically calmed down Rikers Island. It drove crime within the prison down a lot. He also, he did a lot of good things, Kerik, but, you know, unfortunately, because of his fiefdom, and then he got jammed up with the feds with tax thing. I don't know if that was politically motivated or not, but Bernie, I didn't think you were that bad, although you do have a bad reputation. So from 2002 to 2013, here comes little Ray Kelly again. Talk about Irish welfare. Like, can this guy not get enough of a city gig? You know, I did my 20 years with the NYPD, and for the most part, I love 95% of it. But when it's time, it's time to give someone else a chance to let other people try to learn, experience the slot that you're sitting in. I could never just understand why this guy would rub his hands together every time his name came up. So from 2002 to 2013, Ray Kelly's the police commissioner. And now this time he's tough on crime. So under So under Dinkins, he did nothing, right? Under Mike Bloomberg, who Mike Bloomberg was a very intelligent man. He's a genius. He put Ray Kelly in there because he knew Ray Kelly wasn't going to rock the boat. Now, all of a sudden, the job's on the level. Ray Kelly's out there front and center, fighting crime. And the paper loved him. The newspapers, I mean, it's funny how the newspapers and the news and the press, everybody loved Ray Kelly. Talk to the guys in the department what they really thought about Ray Kelly. He wasn't the most liked. You know, he's a political hack. And I think it's funny now that he's complaining about Eric Adams, which, you know, Adams has got his problems. But, I mean, for Ray Kelly to say something, come on, give me a break. So I hope you guys enjoyed the story about me carrying on about the police commissioners I worked under. Next week, I should have a really good episode coming out. He's a former hijacker, car thief, served some federal time. He's written a series of books. I was on another podcast with him. He's nice enough. He said he's going to record with me next week. So hopefully I'll get him on. John Fariso, the retired internal affairs missing person sergeant. I'm going to have him on hopefully in the next couple of days. So I've got some things cooking. I just don't like to rant and rave myself on this thing. But it's like, again, it's very difficult for me to get guests because a lot of people in my world just don't want to be bothered with it. So I'm kind of on my own with this when I find guests, but I appreciate what you guys hanging in with me. Speaking of hanging in, as always, I want to thank everyone for tuning in, especially my listeners. And there's a lot of people from Australia that listen to this podcast. Melbourne, Sydney, and Brisbane, Australia. Honolulu, Hawaii. Middleburg and Gainesburg, Florida. And Zirconia, North Carolina, which, as you all know, is home to the cubic zirconia. If you work in law enforcement or have an interesting criminal background and would like to be a guest on the show, please drop me a note on Twitter or Instagram at Vic Ferrari. If you enjoy the show on YouTube, please, please, please hit the subscriber button and hit the like button if you like an episode, because those subscribers, the more subscribers I get, the easier it will be for me to get monetization, which means they'll throw commercials on and then I can get a little bit of money to pay for the upkeep of this podcast. I can go into that, how to start a podcast, even though like I'm the bare minimum. If you enjoy the content, check out my Amazon author page. Type in my name, Vic, and then my last name, Ferrari Like the Car, where you can preview all my books for free, including NYPD Laughing in the Line of Duty and NYPD Law and Disorder. Thank you all of you for tuning in, and I'll have another episode out next week. God bless.